Right now it's time for Talking Animals. I'm Duncan Strauss, and I'm really delighted to be bringing you another edition of Talking Animals, in which we'll be talking with Melanie Joy, a professor whose new book constitutes a thought-provoking new exploration of meat-eating by animal lovers and others. First, though, as always, we're kicking off the show with an animal tune. This is the Starlight Mints with Rhino Stomp. Kind of sounds like a rhino stomping, too, here on Talking Animals. This is the Starlight Mints with a piece called Rhino Stomp, an animal tune of sorts, as we ease into today's edition of Talking Animals. My name's Duncan Strauss, here with today's edition of our program devoted to all subjects in the animal kingdom. In just a few minutes, we'll be speaking with today's guest, Melanie Joy, a professor who teaches psychology and sociology at the University of Massachusetts, and author, most recently, Why We Love Dogs, Eat Pigs, and Wear Cows, An Introduction to Carnism. We'll find out more about this ideology she calls carnism and the book overall, fascinating, thought-provoking book, when we speak with Melanie Joy in a few moments here on Talking Animals. As usual, we'll welcome your questions and comments at 813-239-9663 or by email at dj@wmnf.org. We'll also give away a copy of Melanie Joy's new book toward the end of the show in Name That Animal Tune. Right now, though, it's time for animal news items and or announcements. First, I want to tell you that Florida Voices for Animals is holding its annual Have a Heart Dinner and Silent Auction Sunday, February 28th from 4:30 to 8 p.m. That's going to be at Trang Viet Cuisine in Tampa. And there's going to be, among other things, a talk by renowned author and motivational speaker Victoria Moran. And, of course, there's the dinner itself, but silent auction, book sales, and more. So I can find out more about this at floridavoicesforanimals.org. Again, that's their Have a Heart Dinner and Silent Auction Sunday, February 28th, 4:30 to 8 p.m. And closer to home, wanted to let you know about and give you a little more specific update about the Talking Animals Festival. So as a WMN event, we are planning to present the first ever Talking Animals Festival, which will include live music in the form of a multiple-hour, multiple-act concert of local bands performing, of course, animal songs, major animal adoption component, tables where local animal groups can provide outreach and vendors can sell animal-oriented products, and we'll have some various vegan elements, animal art, perhaps a guest speaker or two, food, drink, and fun, and more. So mark your calendars. The date's the same as I've told you about before, but the location's different, bigger, fabulous, glorious. So it's the Talking Animals Festival will be held Sunday, April 11th from noon to 4 p.m. at Lowry Park. Not the zoo, mind you, but the adjacent wonderful park where the band shell is. So we'll give you more details as they unfold. But again, it's Sunday, April 11th at Lowry Park for the Talking Animals Festival. All right, let's step into the Talking Animals Comedy Corner, which involves animal-oriented comedy. This is Tom Papa with a piece called Pet People on today's Comedy Corner here on Talking Animals.
We gotta go somewhere, though. This baby is just killing us. We had to have a baby, though. It was really getting to a point. My wife was becoming one of those weird pet people. Like, anytime someone would tell a story about their kid doing something like scoring a goal in soccer, my wife would chime in, "Oh, that's like Gracie when she bats the ball down the hallway." Shut up. Pet people are very aggressive now. Have you noticed that? Pet people, very, very mean. If you don't like pets, they think you're like a Nazi or something. You don't like pets? You're so mean. How can you not like pets? You're so mean. Really, I'm mean. I'm not the one keeping a wild animal hostage in my apartment. No, but he loves me. Really. Open the door. See how much he loves you as he's hightailing it to Pennsylvania.
All right. That was Tom Papa with a piece called Pet People, taken from his album Cool, Calm, and Collected, I'm Duncan Strauss. This is Talking Animals. Our website is talkinganimals.net, where we make available all sorts of information, as well as archives and podcasts of past Talking Animals programs, including our recent shows with Scott Loeb, Archelle Hunley, and Dr. Jane Goodall. We also have a link to the Talking Animals Facebook page. We'd like you to become our fan, and our Twitter page so you can follow us. Plus, there's a place to subscribe to our email newsletter so we can keep you posted on forthcoming guests, program news, and more, including information about the aforementioned Talking Animals Festival. That's all found at talkinganimals.net. It's nearly time to speak with today's guest, Melanie Joy, so let me outline a few things about her. As I mentioned earlier, she's a professor who teaches psychology and sociology at the University of Massachusetts, Boston, and author most recently of Why We Love Dogs, Eat Pigs, and Wear Cows, An Introduction to Carnism, Thought-Provoking New Exploration of Meat Eating by Animal Lovers Amidst Other Issues. So with a reminder that we invite you to join the conversation by calling 813-239-9663 or emailing us at dj@wmnf.org. Let's welcome Melanie Joy to Talking Animals. Are you there, Melanie?
Yes, I am.
Great. Welcome to Talking Animals.
Well, thank you so much for having me.
Thanks for joining us and making the time. And this book is just brimming with ideas, offering all kinds of fodder for discussion, quite a bit to chew on, I guess, as it were. But I thought one way we might want to kind of start today's discussion would be the same way that you started the book. Maybe for our listeners, you could sort of briefly sketch the hypothetical dinner party scene, and then I may mention a similar real-life scene of mine or two, and I think we'll be off.
Okay, absolutely. So, you know, if you can imagine for a minute that you're sitting down to, if you're not a vegetarian, you're sitting down to dinner at a dinner party, and you're eating a delicious beef stew, and in fact, the stew is so delicious that you ask the host for her recipe, and she replies by saying, "Well, the secret is in the meat. You need to start out with 3 pounds of well-marinated golden retriever." For people who do eat meat, this response, chances are what they had seen, you know, just moments ago as food now looks like a dead animal. And chances are what they had experienced as delicious now has become disgusting. And it's striking because nothing about the meat itself actually changed. The texture is the same, the aroma is the same, the flavor is the same, but your perception of the meat has changed. And so this is an example of what I call carnism. Carnism is the invisible belief system that conditions us to eat some animals but not others. It blocks our feeling of disgust when it comes to the animals we've learned are appropriate to consume in this culture.
Okay, Melanie, yeah, and I definitely want to come back and obviously explore that further. But I guess, you know, one of the things that really struck me about just the opening of the book is it reminded me in some, you know, eerie ways almost of a real-life scene that I kind of experienced a few years ago. Just quickly, I was invited over to the home of people who actually had, one of them in particular had been friends of my folks who are, you know, unfortunately no longer with us. And they were inviting people who live in France who are very good friends of my folks. And there's a few other people there. So anyways, everybody's having chicken breast except me. And at one point, someone says, you know, kind of ask me about that. So I sort of explained just from the radio show and some other things just how I'd kind of, you know, really thought differently of things and just you know, was kind of embracing at that point more of a vegetarian diet. And one of the guests who was a lawyer had helped create a dog park in the area and brought her dog to this dinner party, says to me, "Wow, that's really extreme." And I just thought, wow, okay, this probably isn't the time to, you know, bust up the dinner table and get into a big rousing fist fight. But, I mean, I just thought that is so interesting in terms of the classic sort of disconnect that sort of, as I understand it, is sort of at the core or one of the parts of that's at the core of carnism.
And right, exactly. And it's a great example that you use, you know, how we define extreme. It really varies based on our belief system and people who eat meat and meat-eating cultures are, you know, born into this invisible belief system that they don't even realize shapes their perception of animals and the meat that they eat. You know, eating meat is simply seen as a given rather than a choice.
Yeah.
You know, but when eating meat's not a necessity for survival, it is a choice, and choices always stem from beliefs. And so we tend to assume that it's only vegetarians and vegans that bring their beliefs to the dinner table.
And that's you know, obviously I think a crux of the book Incarnism. So maybe you could just sort of develop that a little bit more for us, for people listening who haven't had a chance yet to read the book, of just what that means and what sort of ideologies and sort of dynamics may be going on for folks.
Well, Incarnism, as I said, it's the invisible belief system or ideology that conditions us to eat some animals but not others. It's essentially, you can think of it as the opposite, in a way, of veganism, or you can think of like veganism on a continuum, and carnism is on the far end of that. And it's an ideology it's organized around violence. In that if we, were to take the killing out of meat production, the system itself would collapse. And most people, in their core value system, most people really do care about animals, and most people certainly do not want to think about animals suffering needlessly and intensively. And yet, this is necessary for, especially the kind of meat production that is the norm today. And so the system that's carnism is organized in such a way to enable humane people to participate in inhumane practices without realizing what they're doing. And it uses a set of mechanisms, defense mechanisms, on a social level and on a psychological level. And these defenses essentially block people's awareness and they block their empathy when it comes to eating meat or eating the kinds of meat that people have been conditioned to eat. Carnism teaches us how not to feel when it comes to the select few, out of thousands of animal species that we feel comfortable eating.
Right, and I want to get into more of that, and of course, where I think you're heading towards psychic numbing in just one moment, but I do want to first let our listeners know this is Talking Animals. If you just tuned in, we're speaking with Melanie Joy, professor at the University of Massachusetts, Boston, whose new book is Why We Love Dogs, Eat Pigs, and Wear Cows, An Introduction to Carnism. We invite you to join the conversation by calling 813-239-9663 or emailing dj@wmnf.org. So yeah, let's get into more of that, Melanie, where you sort of left off, because just it seems like part of this whole ideology and the way it seems to operate is that sort of what people are doing to deal with or not deal with that kind of inner discomfort or inconsistency that would be created or is created in some, but I guess has been found a way to sort of be neutralized.
And so, what happens is that for most of us, when we're born into a meat-eating culture, we're eating animals, we're eating dead animals before, the minute we're weaned, before we're even old enough to say our names. And we become so conditioned to do this that we just stop thinking. Most people who sit down to a plate of chicken or pork or beef are not thinking about the fact that they're eating a dead animal. And often when they do think about that fact, they start to feel uneasy about it. And so, but at the same time, if that same person were served a plate of swan or guinea pig or golden retriever, they wouldn't be able to help but have an image of that animal in their mind. And they would very likely see what they, would otherwise call food on their plate as a dead animal. So there's a way in which we internalize, we grow up within this system of carnism. We learn to see the world through the eyes of carnism. And we don't even realize, we're kind of on autopilot. We don't even realize what we're doing as we go through the motions. Like I said before, we see meat eating as a given rather than a choice.
Okay, Melanie, there's plenty more there, and it reminds me of yet another sort of crazy story of mine, but it seems like I'm telling more stories than yours. Doesn't seem right. But anyway, so we're going to take a call in a sec, but I also want to read one of the emails that's come in. It says, very good points made. How do you talk to little kids about this when they're inundated with meat-eating images?
It's a great question. It depends on your role in that child's life. Children don't have free choice the same way that adults do. Most children do, in fact, at some point, or at least many children do, at some point make the connection between, meat and the living animal and become uncomfortable with eating animals and have to be kind of re-socialized into the carnistic mentality. They have these books of happy farm animals and, happy to be eaten farmed animals. So, if you're a parent, then obviously you have a lot of moral leeway in terms of how you communicate with the child. Unfortunately, a child is going to have no choice, but to follow the dictates of their parents. And so when I was actually teaching kids, what I would do is I would talk about the fact that I'm a vegetarian and explain why I chose to become a vegetarian. And that's pretty much as far as, you know, you can go if they're not your kids.
Right, right. Okay, well, thanks for that message and thanks for that answer. Let's take a call here. Hi, you're on Talking Animals with Melanie Joy. Question, please?
Hi. Is this Jamie?
No, you're on Talking Animals with Melanie Joy. Is that not where you mean to be?
No, this is where I'm just making sure that I'm on. I'm just making sure it's me.
You're on the air, and yes.
Hi. I'm calling. I'm someone who failed to become a vegetarian or a vegan, but my partner is recommitting to veganism, and we're going to raise our daughter as a vegetarian until she's able to make that choice for herself.
Sorry. I was just going to sort of, if I could, sort of bridge our email question and your comment there. How are you so far approaching that with your daughter? I'd be interested to know, and I'm sure some of our listeners would as well.
Well, we're not allowing any. She's being nursed, and she's 7 months old, and we started to introduce rutabaga and some squash as her first solid food.
Oh, okay, and 7 months old. Sorry, I don't know why I was picturing someone a little bit older. So, okay, I got that. Okay,
she's pretty young. She's an infant.
Okay, so if you wouldn't mind, that you can ask your question, then we're going to move on to some others.
This is my question, because okay. I watch Anthony Bourdain, and, you know, he makes some comments, I think, about organizations that I have respect for, that I appreciate, but I think there is something different about the commodification of animals and this industrialized process of meat that creates such unnecessary suffering, and what she feels about people who do have to rely on food, on animals that they do kill themselves. I feel there's a difference between eating industrialized meat and a situation where a human being does need the nutrition, and makes that kill, makes it quickly.
Okay, well, maybe
what the position is that carnism still?
All right, let me see. We'll take thanks for your call, and we'll get Melanie's response.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a great question. Now, for those of us, most people in the world today do not need to eat meat. And so when it's not, you know, we have the luxury of reflecting on the ethics of our choices. And frankly, you know, the small, you know, gathering hunting societies that still exist are the least of the problems facing animals today. But, you know, there is a way in which carnism does, I mean, not all animal species across cultures, anthropologists have found that in, you know, cultures around the world, there are still a select group of animal species that are considered edible and other animals that are considered inedible. And so it seems to be that, you know, no matter who you are, no matter where you are, you do have some sort of dictates in terms of what is and is not appropriate to eat. However, like I said, I'm much more concerned with those of us who really do have the luxury of reflecting on the ethics of our choices.
Right. Okay. Again, let people know, this is Talking Animals. My guest is Melanie Joy, whose new book is Why We Love Dogs, Eat Pigs and Wear Cows, an Introduction to Carnism. As those who've already done, we invite you to join the conversation by calling 813-239-9663 or emailing dj@wmnf.org. Okay, well, I have a number of questions, but actually we got all our phone lines lit here, Melanie, so let's take a few more calls.
Okay.
Hi, you're on WMNF on Talking Animals with Melanie Joy.
How you doing today?
Good. A question for Melanie.
Yeah, I got a question.
Okay.
I don't know if you're familiar with Ken Wilber. He's a psychologist, and he did a series called Cosmic Consciousness. And he was referring to, specifically, he referred to the Dalai Lama. And he was talking about the ethical ramifications of eating meat. And he said, you know, in areas such as the Himalayas and areas like that, they're not really a culture that grows a lot of vegetables and things like that. He said the Dalai Lama is one even that when he gets off of roast beef, for instance, and tries to eat a vegetarian diet, he says that he actually gets very ill. He says that his diet needs meat. So how do you feel about something like that?
Thanks for your call.
Yeah, it's a great question, and it's related to the question before. I'm not a medical doctor, so I can't speak to the nutritional aspect of eating meat. One thing I can say is that, when we grow up in such a culture that's so steeped in carnism, our medical doctors, our nutritionists, we're all looking at the world through the lens of carnism. So we're inevitably going to be jumping to a conclusion about, you know, what it means to be eating meat or not eating meat that reflects the mentality of the system. Having said that, you know, in order to kill another human or non-human being, we do need to shut down our empathy to a certain degree. Otherwise, it would be akin to suicide or harming ourselves. So this idea of psychic numbing that enables us to disconnect enough to eat meat, it plays a role no matter where that meat comes from, no matter how we procure the meat, whether it's hunting or you know, small family farming. There needs to be a certain level of emotional distancing. And in you know, historically, people who did hunt for their meat, and in hunter-gatherer cultures, you know, there were rituals performed to kind of morally cleanse the person who killed the animal or the butcher. So there is this mentality that enables us to disconnect. And but again, I think it's a matter of degree, and I say this in my book, it's a matter of degree. You know, do we, a lot of times when I'm talking about carnism, the questions are about all of the very extreme exceptions, you know, kind of to the rule. There will always be some exceptions. But I think it's just really important for most of us who eat meat, we're eating meat that comes from intensive and unnecessary suffering of billions and billions of beings.
Okay, thanks. Let's get one more call on, and then maybe it's my turn to ask another question.
Okay.
Hi, you're on Talking Animals with Melanie Joy.
Hi, I appreciate your work. Looking forward to reading the book. A couple of comments that I had. You know, I wondered if there's any study or research that's been done of late that essentially re-imprints animals. Maybe they don't, in other words, in their own mind, they don't need to necessarily eat one another, can eventually become a civil society themselves where wolves are communing with chickens. And has there been any study and research on that?
Not to my knowledge. And, you know, wolves, I mean, humans are not natural carnivores, you know, so we can survive quite well and, you know, often better without meat. There are carnivorous animals that would die if they didn't eat other animals. But as human beings, we have the ability to reflect on our choices in a way that other animals don't always have.
All right. Thanks for the call, and thanks for the answer, Melanie. And in a way, just sort of maybe following that question from that caller, I'd be curious, Melanie, from your standpoint, where in the carnism scheme of things do flexitarians fit in, or do they?
Where do flexitarians fit in?
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's interesting. I see carnism on a continuum, and mm-hmm. flexitarians are probably somewhere along that continuum. And, you know, carnism is organized to prevent us from recognizing that there's this gap in our consciousness, that there's this kind of moral conflict for many of us who care about animals and yet eat them. And carnism is structured to prevent us from recognizing that gap between our values and our practices. And to me, it's more important, you know, we all have a gap. We are all hypocrites in one way or another. It's impossible to live a completely nonviolent life in the world today. And to me, it's less important is the, you know, the whether or not we have the gap. More important is how we relate to that gap. Are we aware of it? You know, are we making a commitment to closing the gap? Are we committed to our own integrity? And anybody who is, you know, committed to moving along the continuum to living more in accordance with their own values, you know, when it comes to other animals or other humans, I think is making the kind of progress that I hope my book will help people make.
Great. Well, you know, we're going to take a few more callers here, the last part of your response there, I'm just curious, in fact, to know what sort of outcomes, changes, otherwise, do you anticipate will result from people reading this book? I mean, to what extent also will readers maybe represent a slightly self-selecting group?
Well, you know, I've written my book. It's the only book that's actually about the psychology of meat in its entirety. And, you know, and it doesn't talk simply about why people shouldn't eat meat, but why they do eat meat. And I've written it with the hope of, you know, inviting meat eaters into the conversation.
Yeah.
So that they'd feel empathized with and understood, you know, rather than preached to.
Right.
You know, and so I think anybody who's kind of ready to take in this information will be the kind of person who's going to pick up the book. And, you know, the result that I hope is I really believe that, you know, if we can look at meat eating not simply as a matter of personal ethics, you know, but as the inevitable end result of a belief system, then we can really dramatically change the way we think and talk about the issue. And I think we can make a lot of progress there.
Absolutely. And I will just to follow up what you said about the book. Yeah, I mean, one of the things I mentioned in my little email newsletter that went out a couple of days ago is, yeah, it's definitely far from any sort of proselytizing. And if anything, really, it sort of seems kind of presented in a way like a sort of a great, you know, maybe slightly extended, but great, compelling sort of college lecture befitting the fact that you're a college professor. But, you know, it makes me want to go, you know, jump on a plane and go audit one of your classes. Cause again, it's not, you know, it's not preachy. It's not any of those things. It's just like, hey, here's a different way to think about something that we've all grappled with or perhaps avoided trying to grapple with. But yeah, so again, the book is Why We Love Dogs, Eat Pigs, and Wear Cows, An Introduction to Carnism. Our guest is Melanie Joy. Sadly, we're nearing the end of our time. Let's try to take at least one more call, though.
Hello.
Hi, hello. You're on Talking Animals with Melanie Joy.
Is that me?
Yes, you're on the air, sir.
Yeah, I wondered, we're talking the continuum of carnism here, and in terms of its ethical and consciousness, psychological, emotional concerns on this. I just wonder what you feel about the research in Europe that's come up with growing pork from stem cells. So there's no animal involved. It's specifically the growth of muscle flesh only, with no brain involved, no nervous system at all. No other organs, simply the growth of meat from stem cells. Where does that fit ethically? Apparently, this is a product ready to happen very soon. They've got the texture is the remaining thing. The texture of the product now is described like scallops. It's not more like a pork, but they're trying to achieve pork and beef type of status with the flesh. So where do you think this falls ethically? I mean, leaving out any nutritional or medical aspects.
Okay, let me just say, I thank you for that question. And Melanie, if you could just provide a brief answer, just because we are sort of really towards the end of our time here, but by all means, please respond.
Yeah, absolutely. I think anything that doesn't cause unnecessary suffering or suffering to another is a step in the right direction.
Well, there you go. All right. So, again, we just about are at the end of our time now. This has been Melanie Joy. Her new book is Why We Love Dogs, Eat Pigs, and Wear Cows, An Introduction to Carnism. Her website is melaniejoy.org for all kinds of additional information and where you might be able to go to a book signing and other stuff. So, Melanie, thanks so much for making the time to join us today on Talking Animals.
Oh, thank you. It was my pleasure.
Great. Appreciate it. Thank you. Good
Bye-bye.
Luck with the book. All right. I'm Duncan Strauss. You're listening to Talking Animals, where the show website is talkinganimals.net. It's time to proceed to name that animal tune. There'll be a prize, a copy of Melanie's new book, Why We Love Dogs, Eat Pigs, and Wear Cows, An Introduction to Carnism, to the first person who calls in at 813-239-9663 and correctly identifies this animal tune. It's Name That Animal Tune on Talking Animals. Hi, you're on WNF. Do you know the answer?
Yes, I do. When doves by Prince.
Okay, what's your first name?
Amanda.
Okay. Stay on hold. I will come back and get your information, but you have answered correctly. It is When Doves Cry by Prince, and you'll get a copy of Melanie Joy's new book. Thanks for listening. Thanks for playing.
Thank you. Love it.
Okay, we have just about reached the end of today's edition of Talking Animals. The program airs twice a month, specifically the first and second Wednesday of each month, so we'll return next Wednesday, February 10th, when our guest will be filmmaker Geraldine Pezanowski, whose documentary Mine explores the bond between humans and animals, set against the backdrop of Hurricane Katrina. The film won the Audience Award at South by Southwest and will air on PBS's Independent Lens on February 16th. That's the Tuesday after she'll join us right here on Talking Animals. February 10th. So I hope you'll join me then. Talking Animals broadcast outreach consultant is Libby McKenna. My thanks to her. Talking Animals listeners may want to check out Encounters on The Source, WNF's new HD3 channel, Sundays at 10 p.m. Again, mark your calendar for the first Talking Animals Festival, April 11th at Lowry Park. I'm Duncan Strauss. Thanks very much for listening. Have a good week. Be kind to animals. Be kind to others. Be kind to yourself. We're closing out today's show, as always, with an animal tune. This is new music from Norah Jones with Man of the Hour on WMNF Tampa. See you next week.
It's him or me, that's what he said. But I can't choose between a vegan and a pothead. So I chose you because you're sweet. And you give me lots of loving, and you eat meat. And that's how you became my only man of the hour. You never lie, and you don't cheat, and you don't have any baggage tied to your four feet. Do I deserve to be the one?
From WHYY in Philadelphia.
Who will feed you breakfast, lunch, and dinner, and take you to the park at dawn? Will you really be my only man of the hour? I know you'll never bring me flowers.